my son said to me, "Why are we doing this? Why?" Because I was trying to get them involved, taking them to Home Depot, getting supplies. And he was like, "Why are we doing this? You're at a point now where the contractor should be doing this." And it was just, I was just trying to get things done by all means necessary. But you go through these different stages in the business where you have systems and processes where you don't have to do that. And that was the challenge that I had to overcome. In the beginning, I lacked having a lot of systems and processes in place, which caused me to run around crazy.
Welcome to the Real Freedom Show, where we inspire you to pursue your passion to gain time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. Let's get some real freedom together. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Real Freedom, Real Estate Leveraged Freedom, where we find people building time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I am your host, Mike Swenson. If you want to get started on your real estate investing journey or learn more, you can check out our website, freedomthroughrealestate.com. That's freedomthroughrealestate.com. We post all of our episodes there, as well as great articles to hopefully help you decide your path in real estate and what you want to do. But we all know it starts with taking action. And so action is the key to being able to do that. That being said, super excited about today's episode. We've got Faquan Bilal on. He is a trailblazing entrepreneur with 25 years of real estate experience, CEO and founder of NNG Capital Fund, focusing on creative strategies, value add projects, and community driven impact in a couple of different states, New Jersey, Georgia, Alabama, a mix of spec homes and B and C class properties and multifamily, as well as, you know, potentially some other stuff that I'm not aware of. But Faquan, we're so excited to have you on the show. Welcome.
So have me. I really appreciate you. I love, this is like therapy for me. I love talking real estate.
Well, we're excited to be able to hear more about your journey and your story. So yeah, why don't you just start, kind of give us a background, kind of why real estate to begin with, and kind of how did you get started in real estate?
So I mean, when you first look at it, we all think that it's time freedom, right? Is the reason why. It's usually money, or people say time. But what I came to realize that, you know, and this is what any business, not just real estate, is once you become a owner of a business, you spend more hours, 70, 80 hours a week developing and building a business versus a 40-hour week. And people don't realize that. But what it does, it gives you flexibility, is what I like to use, right? I've come through this 26-year journey, and it was my youngest son who said to me, "Hey, I thought real estate give you freedom and time and let you do what you want to do when you want to do it." I said, "Yeah, it's more like flexibility, because I find myself, because it's my business, I love what I do, so it's not work, but I put in more hours." So for those of you who are looking to get started, just be mindful of that. You can make it a lifestyle business. Like, I know some people who do, you know, two big flips a year. They make $250,000 a year. They travel with their family. They're happy. You know, they're not trying to do 100 deals a year. I'm in a mastermind called the Collective Genius, and there's people that's in that group are different parts of their journey. There's some guys doing 300 deals a year, some guys doing 150, some guys doing 10. But real estate is a lifestyle business. It does give you the flexibility. So for me, transitioning from the corporate world into real estate, I've always liked sales, and it just made more sense. If I was going to put all of my effort and energy into something, I wanted it to be for something that I was building. And that's what got me into real estate. And then, you know, I was young, got in the business when I was 24. So making $40,000 a transaction, half the salary I was making at the time, it was a no-brainer, really, to take the leap, you know?
I know for me, getting started before I got into, you know, my own business, it's like, you know, nights and weekends, it's kind of like I had this little ticker on where I was, you know, if my boss asked me to work nights or weekends, it was like, well, you know, how are we going to make up this time? What are we going to do? Do I get some time off if I'm working on the weekend? What does that look like? And then all of a sudden, when you're building your own business, you're much more willing to do that. Obviously, there's a trap of, you know, not wanting to get sucked in it or do too much or make sure that your family or other commitments aren't compromised. But yeah, you're certainly more willing to do things like that when it's your own business.
For sure. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? Because we're doing this for the future us, right? So when we get to an age that you know, we want to fall back, we've put in the work now for that to be possible in the future.
So talk a little bit about kind of what your early days look like in terms of real estate and how that's changed and developed over time.
Yeah, it was mainly fix and flips where I started. So I started off doing that and had the opportunity to ride that wave until the GFC, the global financial crisis. And once that happened, it transitioned my mindset from focusing on the big chunks of cash to building cash flow. And it took me a while to develop that over years. Build up those properties where they appreciate and you get not just break even on some, but you make a couple of $100 and after 10, 15 years, you see this, big appreciation where you can exit, started to transition to that strategy. It's a slow process. So one thing I always remember is slow is smooth and smooth is fast. So if you're looking to get started, just look at if you can acquire one property a year, and you do that for 10 years, and if that one property can make you $300, $400 a month, in 10 years, of course, you have a bunch of equity that you can refinance and pull out. But you'll have, $4,000 or $5,000 a month in cash flow that can offset some of the earned income you're making to kind of get you to that point where you can sell off some of those properties and get a big bulk of cash or just continue to collect the cash flow.
So were you, when you were doing fix and flips, were you working a job as well, or was all your income coming from your fix and flips?
I actually left my job. So
Okay.
a family member of mine was doing real estate and I started to shadow them while I was working. And I had a really good job. I was making over 100,000 a year with commission, base commission and salary. And what made my transition go a little bit faster was I landed a big account and the owners of the company set me down. They lowered my base because my commission was more than what they expected because the account I landed. And I didn't take that too well. And I just put my 2 week notice in. I had already closed a deal. And I just started doing, fix and flips and pretty much going from there. And that's pretty much how my journey got started. But I just jumped out the window and grew wings falling down, as they say.
Well, and I think that's the key. Like we talk about, I mentioned at the beginning, taking action. You're going to be much further faster when you start to take action versus the analysis paralysis. So in terms of your fix and flips, like how did you start? I'm curious to hear, because obviously people feel like they have to have this super sophisticated process right now, but curious to hear, like when you were finding your first few deals, how were you finding them? Where were they located? Kind of what were you looking for? And how did that evolve over time as you got more sophisticated as a flipper?
Yeah, I mean it's really learn by doing. That's how you're going to learn faster is by taking action, like you mentioned earlier, and doing it, you're going to go through, the failure, the growth, and everything else. So, but you have to do it. You have to take action if you really want to do it. And that can just be from just getting education, right? Making a commitment to watch webinars, to go to your local REIA groups. Connect with people, take lunch, treat investors to lunch, extract information from them, shadow them, like just doing all of that, right? You can work your job and slowly learn. Like I go to a lot of local REIAs that I speak at and try to give back value. And I see a lot of people who still have their 9 to 5 show up at night. They put in those extra hours, like after 5 o'clock, they're working on themselves with the education. And then eventually they'll partner with somebody, and then eventually they'll grow into to doing something else. So, that's what I would just say, learn by doing, whether it's taking those action steps or getting educated, and then already moving forward from there, trying to take some action.
Now, were you somebody that was swinging the hammer yourself, or were you somebody that was trying to find good vendors to be able to help with the fix and flips? And then curious to hear how that evolved for you.
No, I didn't swing any hammers. I was the director of the orchestra, if you will, instead of playing in it. But I don't want to get my hands dirty. There's some projects where, I picked up toilets and materials needed from Home Depot to drop it off the site so the contractor can keep working there. And that's what you're going to start off with, right? If you're doing a rental, if you're doing something and you're managing a project, you're going to be the GC. You don't have to swing a hammer, but more than likely you'll be running for supplies and everything else. I mean, I've done that. I don't do it today because I've learned how to make the contractors responsible for that. And if you, it was just before I wanted to go faster, so I was like, I'll pick up the civil, you keep working, I'll do this, I'll do that. And again, my son said to me, "Why are we doing this? Why? Because I was trying to get them involved, taking them to Home Depot, getting supplies. And he was like, "Why are we doing this? You're at a point now where the contractor should be doing this." And it was just, I was just trying to get things done by all means necessary. But you go through these different stages in the business where you have systems and processes where you don't have to do that. And that was the challenge that I had to overcome. In the beginning, I lacked having a lot of systems and processes in place, which caused me to run around crazy. And when I learned the power of making everything systematic, creating scopes of work, putting all that responsibility on a contractor, spelling out to them in the contract what they're going to do, creating performance contracts that they have to be done by X amount of time in order for them to get paid what we agreed on, or they'll lose money. Like, those are things you learn over time. So once I started to, perfect that, my life became more easier. Where now I was the director of the orchestra instead of playing in it, where I can actually hold them accountable from the scopes of works and inspect what I expect. Now I still go to the properties and do inspections to make sure everything is right for them to get paid. And our project managers, we share that responsibility. But I like doing it. We do a lot of luxury spec homes, and you have to have a keen eye to make sure that the quality is there and everything, because no matter how good the contractor is, they're always going to take shortcuts.
Yeah, there's lots to learn about working with contractors, but like you said, it comes through doing, it comes through experience, learning where you made mistakes and be able to put those systems in place to fix that. And I think for people listening, the key is you're still doing, right? You're still going through those processes. You can't expect to know everything or how to properly work with contractors on your first job. That comes through time and being able to build relationships with them. Obviously, there's some contractors that, you have to move on and choose somebody else, and there's, contractors that you like sticking around with, but you learn that through the process.
For sure. You have to start, right? A 1,000-mile journey begin with the first step. And if you don't take that first step, you will never you have regrets. If this is something that you've been thinking about doing for years, like if you've been thinking about doing this for years and you haven't taken a step, then it's not for you. Maybe it's for something else, right? Because if you're looking from outside and seeing somebody who does real estate and you think they're having success, you don't know what challenges, struggles they're going through. Those are the questions that I would ask if I had to go back and start all over again and take the people that I see doing this that I may want to, connect with to get information. I would start off right away saying, what are the challenges that you're facing right now in a business? Like, you have 10 years experience, 5 years experience, whatever. What challenges are you facing right now? Then I would reverse engineer that, right? How did you come over that challenge, or what are you doing now? When you first started, what challenges you have, and figure out those challenges and how they work their way through it, because that's what made them who they are today. Those challenges that they went through, the person in front of you right now was built from those challenges. So, that's very important. Like I just shared with you, a lot of my challenges was I didn't have the right systems and processes in place, right? It's four parts of a business: is people, strategy, execution, and cash. And you have to be good at all four in order to be successful. So the people part is always the challenge, because us humans have a way of doing our own thing and following our own process, even though we may have directions in front of us. So that's why you have to create accountability with your contractors, with your vendors, with everybody, even with yourself, right? So it's always a challenge, is how you grow through it and how do you move forward from the challenge.
Now, are you somebody that's like a systems-minded person or, an organized individual, or is that something where
Wasn't.
maybe you had to hire
I
somebody or
wasn't.
kind of have somebody help assist that?
I had to bring in vendors to teach me that, because I didn't know that. I wasn't an operations person. I hated operations. I was a doer. I was the person that went out and got stuff done. I would always tell people, I got a GSD. I get stuff done. If I had to do it myself, and I was a one-man band. I didn't like to delegate, because I didn't trust that someone would be able to do it as good as I would do it. And it was years and years. Even with hiring a project manager, I would say it's been a 26-year journey for me, but the first 10, 12 years, it was all me running the projects. There was no project manager, because I didn't feel like someone would be able to execute to the level that I would, that someone would be out there Sunday getting it done. Right, Saturday getting it done, because Saturdays and Sundays are so sacred. Oh, we can't. So I was like, I got to get this done. How further would I be if I can work Saturday and Sunday? And if I found contractors who was dancing to that beat and was willing to come out on a Sunday and do a job, I'm right there with them. What do you need? Let's get the materials. Let's go. And I did that for years. I mean, you have to be careful with that. I'm not trying to promote that because that will cause burnout. And you have to find a time where if you are going to be out there grinding on a Sunday or Saturday, that during the week that you're getting the proper rest and stuff like that. But you got to be willing to go all in, like your life depend on it. That's, I believe, what got me to where I am.
Now, you mentioned about kind of, for 10, 12 years doing it on your own and then, eventually finding somebody. Was that a point of like, okay, enough is enough and I'm going to spend time searching for the right person? Or is it you went through a couple people that maybe weren't kind of a fit and found somebody was a fit? Or kind of where did that tipping point happen for you from where it went from you do it all to that person, really helps take stuff off of your plate and assists in putting those systems and processes in place?
For me, it was I had joined the mastermind and I started to really understand how business works. That if you is delegate to elevate, right? How do I started to figure out, I was wanting to know, how do I get back more of my time? I can't do it all, right? So is this task that I'm doing work really worth my time? Or can I hire that out? Right? Is this a $20 hour task, $25 hour task? I can hire that out. Right. I don't have to do that because that's taking up time. And that's when I really started to learn the value of time. And then I just really put a mind dump of all the things that I was doing, started to organize it and say, what can I delegate and what can't I delegate? And I started to work from there. And then that's responsibility. And then with the process, I did a mind dump and said, what are all the steps to construction from the beginning to the end that I knew that I was going through? And it took me some time to put that together. Through Lucid charts, through mind mapping, whatever it was, I had vendors help me put all that together, extract all this information, put it all together, and basically then started to develop a system, right? So that's the first stage. And then the next stage is automation, finding systems that you can automate, whether it's Salesforce, Podio, Go High Level, whatever it is, you can create automation for accountability. And then you can start recording videos and start training people and giving them the video. It's a whole process, right? And it took me years to kind of develop that. And we're still building it. It's still refining the standard operating procedures, the scope of work and everything else, making the process as seamless as possible to get the projects done faster. It's always something you're working on. How can I make it better? How can I make it better? How can I make it better? So that eventually gave me back the time, which is the real currency.
Are you looking to get started or scale in real estate investing but don't know your next step? Are you overwhelmed thinking about finding deals, analyzing deals, doing due diligence, and managing properties on top of it? Go ahead and push the easy button and invest with us. Real estate investing is what we do full time. We've done dozens of deals with hundreds of doors. We have the knowledge and experience to handpick the best deals that most investors can't find. We've got large off-market deals all the time where you can hopefully find returns and economies of scale that you just can't find on your own. The best thing is it's 100% passive to you for less capital than you put down trying to acquire a property on your own. Don't let this year go by where you don't make the leap, add to your portfolio, or you just sit in analysis by paralysis. To find out more, visit freedomthroughrealestate.com and click on invest. You can book a call and learn more there. So get to scaling your portfolio now with us by your side. Now, you'd mentioned spec homes. I'm curious to hear, how did you go from kind of fix and flip type stuff to taking on a project like that? And then also curious to hear more about kind of the multifamily work that you're doing in the Southeast region as well.
So with the luxury spec homes, I started in New Jersey doing regular flips in 99, and I transitioned pretty much after COVID. It's been almost a 5-year journey that we've been on this side of the market doing luxury spec homes. And I kind of feel like, I don't want to say I was pushed out of the lower end market, but the profits were smaller because after COVID prices increased so much, things were selling 30% of a list, which was great because it gave us the opportunity to divest the portfolio that we had. I think the fair market value at the time was 350, 400,000 was the highest selling price home that I've sold at that time in the market. And they started to get up to like 450, 500, but the acquisition cost was way more expensive. So profits were really small. We're used to making a 20% profit. Profits came down to like 4%. And it wasn't worth it. Plus the risk that was involved with that because of the areas that we were doing this in. It was low income areas. So you had to worry about materials being stolen, properties being broken into, vandalized, whatever it was, like as you're doing a construction, right? So when I looked at on the other side of the coin, if I went into an area where we were selling $1 million houses, what would the acquisition price be, construction cost, and what would the profit be? And when I took the time to analyze that, I was like, wow, this is amazing. The profits, it would take me three houses to one to get the same profit. So it was a no-brainer. Then it was having the confidence of that market, right? Because I was selling houses below 500,000. Now we're selling houses for $1 million. And I didn't understand at the time that there were actually more serious buyers for that type of product. So once we did a few deals, it was flipping higher end homes first. And then what I discovered was if I was to do it ground up, it's a more seamless process. I can actually know the expenses because when you're doing a gut rehab, it's unknown, right? You put a 10, 15% contingency, but you'll go 25% sometimes over your budget, which kills your profit. So when I started to look at ground up construction, I realized that you can determine a price per square foot. And you can reverse engineer it. So if you know a house in this area is selling for 500 square foot, you can figure out what your cost to build is, whether it's, 285, 230, depending on the fixtures you're doing, you know there's room for profitability there. So when I started to look at the math that way, I go, oh, this is good. Profits are way bigger, but the only thing is the time to sell, right? The smaller houses you can sell within 4 or 5 months. The bigger houses take you a year, sometimes 18 months, depending if you need a variance and everything else. So that kind of mess with your cash conversion cycle, it slows it down a bit. So you got to be mindful of that when you're doing bigger projects. But that's kind of my journey from doing a smaller project to the bigger projects. And even today, at one point we transitioned to just doing all ground up. And now today, because it's a buyer's market, things are decelerating, not as far as price, but it's kind of slowing down. We're in the Northeast, by the way, so our market is still on fire. I mean, but if you go anywhere else, Florida or anywhere else, the values are dropping like crazy. Where in our market is still strong. We don't see too many price adjustments. There are some just because they were priced wrong, overpriced. But it's a slowdown because there's more buyers out, being choosy on stuff now. But if you have quality product, like new construction comes with a 10-year warranty, that kind of sets you apart from the average seller that's just doing a gut rehab. But we're transitioning a little bit now and going back to doing some more of those gut rehabs because the cash conversion cycle is faster on those. Profits are not as big as the ground up spec homes, but if you can close a couple of them while you're waiting for that spec home to close, then it all makes sense.
Now, are the contractors that are building the spec homes for you, is that kind of new crew that you have, or is that folks that you've built relationships with from back in your kind of fix and flip days?
Mixture. So we have the finishers that I've had relationships with for years. Once the shell gets up and MEP gets done, same sheetrock crew, same plumbers. I mean, same really same electricians, plumbers. We were using them on the other projects, but we had to get new contractors to do foundation, grading, hardscaping. We had to get a few more roofers, a few more carpenters to kind of help with the framing and stuff like that. So we had to build that part of the business out. And we had to build out the part of the finishes where we had to get the people who do really good ceramic tile, molding, carpentry, so we could do multiple projects at the same time. That's kind of how we built that out. And you always have to have resources that you need, right? So, and then there's different stages you'll go through in the build. You'll vertically integrate some of the stuff where you have your own painters, landscapers, sheetrockers, and then some of the stuff you outsource to contractors, or you'll do a little bit of both.
I think the key is hearing you talk about, as the market changes, right? You had to adjust, and what worked in the past doesn't always work in the same way in the future. So you kind of adjusted, scaled up, find some more profitable opportunities, and then the market changes a little bit, and you kind of dip back into that. And so I think for somebody that has been in it for a lot as long as you have, you've been able to kind of ebb and flow as the market's changed, and your relationships grow. And so it's kind of cool to see how you can, scale and tweak things depending on how the market adjusts.
And you always have to make adjustments and pivots. It's You can't stay doing the same thing because you'll die. Right? Every cycle in the market have a different strategy. And you have to be able to learn how to adapt, make those changes, and then it'll come back around. Sometimes it's a market for fix and flip, sometimes it's a market for just rentals, right? When the profits are small, you want to build your cash flow and do rentals and maybe do less flips. Like the wholesalers that are out there, you know, a lot of people who are doing wholesales, right? Things slow down, a lot of regulation change. Some people are still doing it and killing it. It depends on what market you're in, but a lot of those guys are starting to flip, right? Or a lot of those guys are starting to build rentals. Or they're doing lending because they built up a big bag of cash from wholesaling. So you have to be able to understand real estate to know which lever to pull in the market cycle.
So talk a little bit about what you've got going for your multifamily projects. I'd love to hear how that came to be.
A multifamily is part of our impact project. So in New Jersey before COVID, we did both strategies, the fix and flips and rentals. And after COVID, we had a lot of tenants that was saying, hey, it's COVID, I can't pay rent, right? We were fortunate enough to have a large portion of our base Section 8, so we got those consistent checks. But we saw an opportunity to go to the Southeast and do our impact project. So we divested the portfolio because after COVID, prices went up. So we took advantage of that. We divested the portfolio, the rental portfolio we had in New Jersey. And then we went down to the Southeast and started buying more properties. And we're pretty much focusing on middle Georgia. We buy properties that are anywhere from 40 units to 150 units. Really, the sweet spot is between 100, between 40 and 100 units, because that's where the big boys don't play. We acquire those properties through marketing direct to seller, property managers, marketing to those guys, relationships we created with brokers. And then we do the due diligence. If it works out, we take down a property. But the big part of that is the impact that we like to make to the communities. And what I mean by that is not only just going in and doing curb and appeal, a unit turn, and increasing rents for profitability, but taking complex to community, right? There's a lot of nonprofit organizations that you can partner with that will come to the property and have sessions where you're teaching people about home ownership, teaching people about credit repair, teaching people about applications, and you're uplifting the community from inside out and trying to shift that mindset. So you get to do a lot of some of that stuff there. You get tax credits, you get a whole bunch of things there to help you out at the same time while you're turning the units, increasing rents, making curb appeal look beautiful. It's a long-term strategy. So it allows us to add that value, impact, right? I come from a low income area, single parent household, mom on welfare, five kids. So I know what those areas are like, and there's not a lot of people who's willing to go into those areas to create an impact. Most people are just drop off yield, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's a capitalist country, so. But if you can earn money and do good at the same time, it's great. So we like to align ourselves with capital partners who have that mission in mind to help us with our BHAG, our big hairy audacious goal, and that's provide housing for 5,000 families, affordable quality housing for low-income families.
Now, I know you had mentioned the collective genius here previously, and you talked about, joining masterminds and things like that. Talk a little bit about the value of getting in some of those rooms with big thinkers, people who are maybe going through problems at the same level that you are, people that are going through problems higher than where you're at. But talk about the impact that that's made for you being a part of those masterminds.
Oh, wow. What you pay for in a mastermind, you pay for speed. That's what you pay for, because you're going to get in a room with people that are 10 levels above you. And there's a saying, I know you guys heard it before. If you look at the four or five friends around you, that's who you are, right? Because you're only going to grow as much as your network is going to grow. So being in those rooms constantly, we meet once a quarter. We have calls every week, different strategy calls, property management, raising capital, whatever it is. And you're constantly educating yourself and learning and trying things. And that's really what helped me develop systems. And I learned EOS from there, the Entrepreneur Operating System by Gino Wickman, really how to run a company, not just how to flip houses, how to run a company, how to build a team, how to hire, how to do certain things, right? That it helps you grow faster. And it's more of an accountability also, because you have people there that you can connect with, you can get with them, and they'll share information with you. You can fly out to the office and spend a few days and watch the operation. So it's just you pay for speed, and it helps you grow.
It's been great to see or hear about your journey, kind of how you've changed over time, some of the different things that you've dabbled in. So for people that, you know, love your story, love what you're doing and want to reach out to you, how can they do that?
It's my website, nngcapitalfund.com. If you're interested in about learning how to partner with us, you can set up a discovery call and I'd like to learn more about your investing journey. I'm also on social media. You can catch me on, you know, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. And yeah, definitely check out NNG Capital Fund if you guys are interested in learning more about what you're doing. And yeah, thank you so much for taking the time and best of luck to you in the future.
There's so many different ways to do it. That's both a gift and a curse, because there's so many different things that can get distracting. And I don't regret anything I've done. It's all worked and it's all worked out well. I wish I would have started buying bigger deals earlier.
Welcome to the Real Freedom Show, where we inspire you to pursue your passion to gain time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. Let's get some real freedom together. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Real Freedom as we talk about building time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I am your host, Mike Swenson. And if you are interested in starting your real estate investing journey, feel free to check out our website, freedomthroughrealestate.com. Got some great information there, videos, articles to watch for you to get started and educate yourself on your journey. Now for today's episode, really cool story of somebody that has done real estate in quite a few different areas. You're not limited to just where you live. And in some cases, you bounce around a little bit and you meet different people and you pick up things along the way. And so that's certainly Jordan Moorhead's story. He is our guest today. From Louisville, Kentucky, lived in Minnesota for about 10 years, now down in Austin, Texas, investor, have done BRRRRs, run a real estate team, mobile home parks is kind of where you're at right now. So all sorts of stuff that we get to cover in this episode. Jordan, I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate it.
Why don't you just give us that background story and kind of let us know about what you've done?
Absolutely. So yeah, like you said, I lived in Louisville. I moved up to Minnesota, was in college for quite a while, didn't finish college, got into the entrepreneurial side of things, started my own small business. Eventually, I got tired of the small business, which was personal training. And I had a couple trainers working for me, but I saw the ceiling and it wasn't where I wanted to be. You know, the ceiling could have crept up slightly over time with a lot of work. But I saw real estate and said, hey, I want to start making passive income. So I bought a duplex while I was still running that personal training business. Then I bought a sixplex while I was still running the personal training business. About 6 months after buying the sixplex, I said, hey, I really like real estate. I want to be more involved. I feel like I can offer a lot that a lot of agents don't have. And that's understanding house hacking and investing. So I got a real estate license. My first year full-time as a realtor, I sold 24 houses. So that would have been my first full year was 2018. I got a license in 2017. I started investing in 2016. In 2018, I also bought another 2 6-plex properties on the same street as the first one. And then at the same time, I found another one off market and flipped that over to my dad, who was interested in getting in real estate investing, who's also an agent in Louisville, Kentucky, who sold me the other 3. So he still owns that. I do not own those 3 6-plexes anymore. But 2018, at the end of the year, I got in a bad motorcycle wreck down here in Austin. I was actually working on moving back down to Austin, got in a bad motorcycle wreck, ended up in the hospital for a little over a week, was in an intensive rehab, like an inpatient rehab for about another month. Then I was down in Florida for a while at my mother's house recovering because it's all flat. There's no snow. Went back to Minnesota, was there about another year and a half. Came back down here to Austin, kept buying properties here in Austin. And then started doing the BRRRR deal with a partner in Louisville, Kentucky, with the profits from my second house hack that I owned here in Austin. So I've just kind of been working like you said, there's so many different ways to do it. what you think is going to be your forever strategy may not be. I was committed to multifamily. I met Todd Dexheimer. He's there in Minneapolis, St. Paul, at a pizza parlor at a local meetup. It's the apartment investors meetup in Bloomington down there. Saw how well he was doing in multifamily. Around this time, multifamily was super, super popular on all the podcasts, all the books, you know, online. And said, I'm going to get into multifamily. Oddly enough, before that, I had a personal training client who I still talk to today, actually now lives in Dallas. It seems like everybody's moved to Texas. He lives in Dallas. He told me about mobile home park investing probably back in 2015. Said, I met this guy. I went to this guy, Frank Rolfe's mobile home park boot camp. And I want to say it was somewhere down here in Texas or something. And mobile home parks are the way to go. I'm going to get into mobile home park investing. You got to learn more about it. He gave me his book from the boot camp, read that book, learned more about that. And in 2019, actually took the MHU boot camp, Mobile Home University boot camp, from Frank Rolfe down here in Austin. Didn't do anything with it for quite a while. So if you think, pay attention to the timeline, I got started investing in 2016. I took that boot camp in 2019. I owned something like 22 units at the time there. In 2020, I started doing BRRRR single families. We did almost 40 of those. We did 37 BRRRR single family properties, maybe 38. I lose count sometimes. And I didn't buy my first mobile home park till the end of 2023. So you talked about in the beginning here, there's so many different ways to do it. That's both a gift and a curse, because there's so many different things that can get distracting. And I don't regret anything I've done. It's all worked, and it's all worked out well. I wish I would have started buying bigger deals earlier. So we just bought, like I said, a 31 lot mobile home park. So 30 lots in one single family house in Louisville, Kentucky, in November of 2023. The returns are better than anything else I've ever bought. And it was a challenge to find it. And so we bought 31 at once versus we bought 38 over 2.5 years. And we were running around like chickens with our heads cut off, getting these deals together. We ran into a million different problems. We could spend the whole podcast on that, all the problems that I ran into with BRRRR that I could tell you not to do. And I love BRRRR. I'm glad we did the BRRRR, but we didn't do it right a lot of times. And there's some ways that you just make sure you don't run into those same issues.
Yeah, there's definitely scalability issues that people run into with the BRRRR. And obviously, yeah, a lot of people have been very successful at it. A lot of people have figured out how to scale. But kind of to your point, you are honing in on where you're going to kind of put yourself in the future based on what you've done in the past. It's kind of like a funnel. Like you're doing some things, you're learning like, oh, I like this, or I don't like this, or I like how this works. Or maybe you get a key relationship in one area that might propel you forward. And so slowly getting closer and closer to kind of where you want to be. But it's because of that journey that you know where you want to go, because you've experienced the pain of your past deals. Now you see mobile home parks as that place for your future, but you wouldn't have known that had you not done it. And I think that's the thing, is I talk to more and more people who want to get into investing or start investing. It's like, you got to just get in the game and do something to determine what works, what doesn't work. And you're slowly going to adjust and get better and better and find that sweet spot. But you're not going to find the sweet spot just listening to podcasts and reading books about investing.
No, and you're absolutely right. And what I've learned is, you absolutely have to get started. You have to get out there and do something. I got advice early on, scale up as fast as you can. You know, stay away from if these are your goals, maybe don't focus on the small stuff. But the small stuff is easy, and that becomes a kind of a curse at some point. So my biggest mistake that I did wasn't that I did any certain sort of asset or didn't do any certain sort of asset class. It's that I didn't pay attention to my goals. My goals were X. Let's say my goals are X amount of dollars in cash flow. And instead, I'm just looking at what's the best deal or what deal can I find, rather than does that deal help get me closer to my goals? And that was my biggest mistake personally. I did a lot of stuff that you can look at it on paper and say, Jordan, that worked great. But that didn't get me that much closer to my goals, which were financial freedom. In fact, the two duplexes I still have here in Austin have gotten me closer to my financial freedom number than all of those single family properties that I have in Louisville. And then all of those multifamily properties I had in Louisville ever did. So two duplexes in Austin.
It comes down to kind of that figuring out where on cash flow versus equity, kind of a sliding scale. You know, typically you might find more cash flow where you find less equity. There's somewhere there's a balance, and every investor has different goals, and your goals might change. Early on, I tend to find that people want to focus on the cash flow to be able to kind of build some cash flow going, and then maybe they shift towards equity. But other people are like, forget that. I'm just going to go towards equity. It really doesn't matter at the end of the day when you start to get work through that. But once again, you're not going to know that until you get moving into it. And so it would have been easy to say, Jordan, just wait, buy these two properties in Austin and you'll be good. But you probably wouldn't have gotten there unless you did all the stuff you did in the past.
Yeah, and I think that I have a perspective that it's backwards. I think you should focus on equity at first when you don't have anything. So I got started house hacking. I had like $6,500 that I had to put down on that first house hack, and I had to cash out the majority of a Roth IRA to even get that money. I had no equity, is the point. I had no equity at that point. So I needed to focus on how can I keep my expenses as low as possible and grow as much equity as possible. Now that I've done that, the equity has started to have diminishing returns. Is you can't eat equity, you know? But if you have this equity, you can then invest to make cash flow. And I think you need to figure out at what point do I want to start turning the equity into more of an annuity stream or cash flow? And what does that look like for me? I had a long argument. You mentioned GoBundance before we got started on this call. And not an argument. I had a conversation with the guy at GoBundance here recently. He said, hey, I just focus on growing the equity. Because for me, when I get to the point that I want to turn that equity into cash flow, I'll have such a massive amount that I'll just turn it into cash flow. And for me personally, I'm a little bit opposite now. I just want to get as much cash flow as I can. I don't necessarily care about the equity because the equity doesn't do anything more for me at this point in my life. You know, I've built pretty good equity and pretty good net worth. And this is against like any FI or financial independence or I want to spend some of it. You know, I'd like to have extra cash that I could spend on luxuries. I kind of subscribe to that line of thinking of if I'm going to buy things that are frivolous, I want to buy them with passive income. I don't want to buy them with active income. I want to use the active income to plow into more passive investments or more investments that are either going to make me more equity or make me more passive income.
Even as you explain that, you can hear the journey of your thought and how it's evolved or changed over time. And I think that's going back to that person sitting on the sidelines. Like, that's the stuff you've got to get in the game for. You're not going to come to those conclusions, or you're not going to learn those lessons until you do something. You know, find a way to get in the game, manufacture your first involvement in investing some way, shape, or form, and then you'll start that journey.
Have you ever heard the phrase, you're the average of the top five people that you hang around? Well, real estate agents, I'm excited to increase your five with you. We're launching the Real Freedom Investor Agent Tribe to help you get educated and connect with others to build your real estate investing journey, and also to help you along the way as you're working with real estate investors. So come check it out on our website, realfreedom.com. Go to the store. We have a membership, we have a mastermind group, and private coaching to help you stay accountable to your real estate investing goals and to make sure that you connect with like-minded people to accelerate your progress and to cheer you on along the way. Check it out, realfreedom.com. Click on the store.
So talk a little bit about your real estate team. You know, in addition to your investments, launching a real estate team, moving to a different place, launching a team and growing a team. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So, you know, we talked about when I got started real estate investing, I actually hit rookie of the year at our brokerage. I almost hit rookie of the year in the region. And I think I might have had a good chance had I not gotten a bad motorcycle wreck at the end of October. I was hairs away from it. I was runner up for rookie of the region. So I got really involved in how do I help as many people as possible do this same thing, get into house hacking, get started with financial freedom. Because I really truly believe if you don't do something more than just max out your Roth IRA, you're going to be living on the minimum at the end of your life, saying, how can I save money? How can I not have enough, not spend too much? Because I personally don't believe Social Security is going to be around for that much longer. It sounds like it's going to go insolvent by mid 2030s. Maybe they'll print their way out of it, but who knows? So yeah, I've been really passionate about that because I know if I get one person into a duplex, let's just say a duplex is $500,000 here in Austin. I get one person into that duplex in 30 years, it's likely to be worth around $1 million. And it's likely to be throwing off cash flow of anywhere in the $5,000 to $8,000 a month. So you either sell it, you have that $1 million, or you have another $5,000 to $8,000 a month. Of course, you're going to have property taxes, insurance, those types of things, but that's still a lot of extra money. Almost a replacement of what your Social Security check would have been. Mm-hmm. So every time we can get somebody involved in that, awesome. And then, of course, we do help some people that want to buy regular homes, but the majority of them are house hackers, investors. So I got started doing that myself. I had a really good first year. I had a really good next couple of years. Eventually, I had more business than I could handle. And I had a buddy getting started in the real estate industry who was also doing this house hacking thing. He had three at the time. And he said, hey, I'd like to come work with you. And I know we talked about it, and it kind of that didn't come around right away. But he started working with me. He hit rookie of the year the first year. And that was my first team in Minnesota. I actually had my now fiance working on the back end of the team. She has done a lot of administrative roles for real estate teams in Minnesota and then bigger companies after that. But when I moved down here to Austin, I kind of started that same thing over, just an abbreviated version of it. Within about a year and a half to 2 years, I had agents on my team again here in Austin. Again, you talked about move to Austin. I didn't know anybody in Austin. I knew a handful, maybe 10 to 15 people. Because I actually did live down here in 2016 for 6 months. Moved down here, was ready to be down here. Did not plan it well, did not have enough money, had to go back to Minnesota and restart that business I talked about earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
So, within about 2 years, I had a team. I had one agent, I had two agents, I had three. I think my peak has been four agents and two admin staff. Right now, we're at three agents. They are all house hackers. They all have experience investing in real estate. That's a requirement to join our team because of who we work with. And I don't care if you have experience selling real estate. I care that you understand real estate because I can teach you how to be a real estate salesperson. Mm-hmm. I can't teach the investor mindset though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not that easily, unless you're really interested in learning. But my requirement to be an agent is that you're a real estate investor.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, when you think about a lot of real estate agents, they tend to think of themselves as salespeople, where it's like, I could be selling homes, I could be selling copy machines, I could be selling whatever it might be. And so they think of themselves as a salesperson. So it's like, when's my next commission check? They don't have that mindset of an investor. And so they're just focusing on deal to deal to deal. I'm making my calls to get my next deal, where that investor mindset is thinking about how are we building something over time? Building a business, building streams of income, building wealth. And yeah, to your point, that's the harder part because I work with agents on my team that have sold a lot of real estate, and it's just so hard for them to even think about like how to start investing. When I show them a deal calculator, like here's how you analyze a deal, their eyes gloss over. They don't know how to think about that. And they've been in real estate for 5-10 years and haven't bought a property, haven't worked with an investor, and just don't understand how to analyze a deal. So it is a different mindset shift.
It is. And I think a lot of it is something that can be learned when you understand the power of it. And again, another something we talked about before we got started here is you have just such amazing tax benefits as a real estate salesperson when it comes to investing in real estate, because you automatically get the real estate professional status. Of course, talk to your accountant, make sure your accountant files you as a real estate professional, but that gives you the right to unlimited depreciation from passive investments to offset your active income. So, for example, and again, I'm not an accountant, I'm not an attorney, I'm not a tax professional, make sure to talk to your tax professional. But for example, if you made $200,000 selling real estate and you had $200,000 of write-offs, provided you have, and I learned this the hard way, paid your Social Security, maybe you're on a W-2 from your own business, that kind of stuff, you can wipe away that active income with the depreciation from real estate. So we have unlimited depreciation as real estate professionals. I think that is the biggest benefit for real estate salespeople as real estate investors. Because, yeah, you can go make really good money as a real estate agent, but then you're going to get slapped by the tax man. I think in Minnesota, you're 8 to 10% state income tax, something like that. Yeah, and then you've got 30% from the federal government, roughly. I mean, that's almost half of your earnings gone day one. But if you can reduce that with depreciation from real estate investments and all the other write-offs from real estate investments, you can invest that money and grow it further later on.
I remember that with my first journey, you know, we bought our first property right as the market crashed and we stayed in it for 4 years, turned it into a rental, and then bought a short sale and house hacked that. But I remember with our townhouse, you know, we were cash flow even, maybe just a slight loss, kind of depending on the year. But come tax time, we had those write-offs. It's different then than it is now, but we had some of those write-offs. And then at the same time, you know, the mortgage is getting paid down. And so I remember even when I wasn't in real estate full time, I was like, oh, $300 a month is coming off the mortgage. And on average, a couple $100 a month is coming off on the taxes, even though I wasn't feeling that extra income because we were cash flow pretty even. I was still building wealth because of that happening, just because we were able to make the cash flow work. And it's that little bit that will continue to grow over time that people just don't think about.
Yeah, and I think that real estate investing versus, let's say, stock investing or ETFs, a retirement account, you're putting it all in VTI through Vanguard. People look at that and they just see the principal grow over time. And they say, well, I'm getting 8% in my VTI. That's great. And they say, well, you're telling me to go invest in real estate. My cash on cash return would only be 8%. Why am I going to do all that work for that same return? That misses everything you just mentioned. That misses the loan pay down. That misses the depreciation, which comes off your taxes. And that misses the appreciation of the real estate. So when you look at your real estate investment holistically, the same way as you would look at your stock investing, the returns are double a lot of the time, sometimes better, especially when you're doing your own real estate investments. I've seen some of my investments be 10, 20, 30, 40, 50% upon sale, you know, way more. My first duplex, just quick numbers, bought it for $182,000, put $6,700 down, something like that. Spent about $15,000 rehabbing the property. I lucked out and I got the siding replaced by hail storm damage, which happens a lot in Minnesota. So I'm in it for roughly 20 grand. I sold it 2.5 years later for $327,000. What's that? 700% return? You know, good luck finding that in an ETF. That's abnormal, but not completely uncommon with real estate. Again, like you said, you have to be in the game because some of them might just be 20% returns compound over time. But, you know, you can hit those just massive home runs. And I bought that property not knowing that, too. I bought that property thinking, I mean, this is an okay deal. It'll work. I thought at the time it was going to be worth 230 after the rehab was done. Mm-hmm. And I lucked out. I got that siding. So again, there was some luck with the storm damage. which again also does happen from time to time in Minnesota, and the market did well. But you have to be in the market. It doesn't mean you can't do other investments, but especially if you're a real estate professional, you have to be investing in real estate. It's essentially practicing what you preach.
Well, and even to your point, mentioning about appreciation, you'd mentioned, you know, let's just say 5 to 8% cash on cash return. Somebody might hear that and think, oh, well, my stock might outperform that. But then if you talk about the appreciation, just for clean numbers, say it was a $100,000 house. Now, I know you're not going to really find a $100,000 house, but if I'm only putting 20 or 25% down on that, that house appreciates by 5%, right? We hear appreciation is 5%. That's $5,000. But remember, I only put in 20 or 25. So it's actually multiplied by 4X or 5X. So it's actually a 20 to 25% return on my money for that appreciation. And that's not including the depreciation, the tax benefits, the mortgage pay down, the cash on cash, like all that stuff compounds. And 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, you might have a step back in one of those areas, but you have all of these things adding up over time. And that's the huge win of real estate investing.
You know, Bigger Pockets actually has, it's a very simple calculator. It's similar to an Excel spreadsheet, but they spit out these graphs and numbers at the bottom of it after you run a property through their calculator. I've not used it in a long time. I have other spreadsheets I use now, but I remember seeing that and saying, wow, you know, this is a 10% or 8% return, but over a couple of years, the returns are high double digits. And this is amazing. So it's good to look at it holistically, like we just mentioned.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Jordan, so much for coming on and sharing. We talked about a lot of different stuff. You've certainly had a lot of experience in a lot of different areas. For people that want to reach out to you, learn more about what you're doing in Austin and other places, how can they do that?
If you're on social media, I'm very easy to reach on Instagram at Jordan_Moorhead. My phone number is 512-888-9122. And my email is jordan.moorhead@kw.com. And Moorhead is spelled M-O-O-R-H-E-A-D. Lots of people put the E after the R, and there is none.
That's the beauty of being a real estate agent, is you want to be found, right? So
yeah,
you can find your phone number and email anywhere. So
yeah, it should be very easy to find me. So just Google me and you'll find me.
Yeah, cool. Well, thank you so much, Jordan, for coming on and sharing. It's exciting to hear your story and excited to see where you grow with more about your mobile home park investment.